Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
I need 11,780.
Cloning through the central banking.
We're signing Mick Mulvaney.
Okay. I can't stay.
Good morning, Sweet World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, January 11th, hashtag full squad to start the week right. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling this morning with Mr. What You Need to Know himself, Tass Mellis.
Well, it's good to be back on the big show.
Hey, Tassie. We got the Bassmaster, ripping them lips, Trey Kirby.
Ayo!
Ayo! The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friend.
Last but not least, making the magic happen is JD.
Hello.
There he is. And here we are. Shout out to the stream team. Make sure you guys like and comment and subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. We eclipsed 24,000 subs on Sunday. The goal was 25K. Oh, so close. But let's just do it today.
Why not?
Right.
Why not on a Monday? Make it happen, people.
If you listen to the podcast, highly recommend you got to check out No Dunks YouTube, because we had the return of Lee's very solid plays on Friday. That video is up. Two thumbs up. The best ratio in the business, Lee. At one point, Lee, you had 1,000 likes on the VSP and zero dislikes. It's incredible ratio. And so if you are listening to this podcast, we are now going to include in the episode description a link right there for you. Click it. It'll take you to No Dunks YouTube channel and hit subscribe. That's one click, baby. Well, I guess it's sort of two clicks. You got to click the link and then you got to subscribe, but close enough. So, Lee, it must be great to have VSP back in your lives and our lives. It's amazing.
So much fun just to bring back those plays, you know, because people do just get sick of dunks all the time. They want to see good ball movement. They want to see pump fake parties. They want the boomerangs. They want the passport plays. And what was really good this weekend, already I've compiled probably 10 very solid play candidates for this week already.
Oh boy.
So it's great. I've been getting tips on Twitter as well when a great play goes down, so might bring shout outs into the mix. I'm not sure yet. Still working on the format.
Goodness. Oh boy.
We got to cancel it. I'm throwing some thumbs down on that. I'm throwing some thumbs down early.
By the way, I will say, you mentioned the likes there, right? I ended up with two dislikes, right?
Sorry.
Now, listen,
one was mine.
Okay, that's fine. I can ride one. But listen, petty dislikes are the weakest dislikes you can possibly have out there.
Right.
If you don't like the video, make it a genuine dislike. Don't make a petty dislike. Because after you sent out that tweet yesterday there, Skeetsy, I retweeted it.
Yeah.
Within seconds, someone else disliked it. That's a petty dislike for me. Get out of here with that.
Yeah.
Genuine dislikes or likes only, nothing else, okay? I mean, that's all I just want to say. It's a little bit of an announcement I'd like to make. I can handle a dislike. I'm not anti-dislike.
But genuine dislikes.
Genuine, honest dislikes, okay?
Right. So you can't dislike the video because 1,300 people have liked it and then, I better dislike it.
Precisely. Get out of here with that. Or man up and say who you are, okay? Just say I dislike it, okay? That's all.
Excellent. Well, go watch that. It's a lot of fun. And it was like, 2.5 minutes? But it sounds like it's going to be about 15 minutes this Friday, GD, so get ready for that. Email us your questions and comments for this week's Beach Steppin' podcast. We'll be stepping on the beach later this week. Email them at nodunks@theathletic.com, or you can leave a comment in the YouTube section. You can tweet at us at No Dunks Inc. as well. Go grab yourself some fire No Dunks merch at nodunks.com. Immaculate items always available. And New Year's same great sports writing is still available at the Athletic subscription. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks where you can sign up for $3.99 a month. That is like nothing. A cup of coffee, really.
Single cups.
It's amazing. So theathletic.com/nodunks, that lets them know that we sent you there. And if you haven't got an Athletic subscription, you really should. It's fantastic. Not only for the writing, You got the podcasts as well, and the NBA shows are amazing. Forget No Dunks. You got the Athletic NBA show, House of Strauss, and all that. So go check that out. All right. We're going to get to NBA weekend winners and losers as we always do on a Monday. But first, guys, rough couple of days for the league when it comes to coronavirus affected players and then the contact tracing, quarantines, and all this stuff going on. The Sixers and Celtics were nearly unable to meet the requirements of playing with 8 available players this weekend because of players quarantined due to positive tests and contact tracing. And then we had the Heat, who just had 7 eligible players. We're going to be taking on the Celtics, who, by the way, we're going to just have 8, but that game got postponed because you got to have a minimum of 8. So it's our second postponement of the year. Now, we have a bunch of other players, too. I mean, Bradley Beal, because of contact tracing issues, and Avery Bradley and Maxi Kleber and obviously Jason Tatum with the Celtics. I mean, it goes on and on. It sort of was a pretty wild weekend. The NBA task says no plans to pause the season. They've just come out and said that. They said, we were ready for this to happen. It's happening. We're going to soldier through. And, outside of postponing some games, we're not taking a 2-week hiatus here to see if the virus goes away. What should the NBA do, in your opinion? Are they doing the right thing, I guess, is another way to ask it. Like, they have to do this to try and get through the season, or should they be doing something else, or what are they doing wrong? What do you think?
Well, once they decided, hey, we're having an NBA season, they understood that this was going to happen. I mean, that was the first thing. If they didn't want any of this to happen, then they could have just decided to eat $500 billion or whatever the dollar figure is. But in this instance, I just find it really difficult to try and track and trace myself.
Right.
Because there's rules for people who contract the virus. You're out for 10 to 14 days. Jason Tatum's the biggest named player who's contracted the virus. You're out 10 to 14 days. But the tracing procedures of the other guys, there's so many guys. There's multiple guys. I wouldn't be surprised if all 30 teams have had somebody get sit due to contact tracing. It's not that high. But those procedures aren't revealed to the media. Like, for instance, on Friday, Jonas Valanciunas was playing in a basketball game. He was playing for the Grizzlies. He was pulled 1 minute left in the second quarter against the Nets. He didn't test positive. So what did the team learn midway through the game that he came into contact with? I have no idea. Was it something they should have known prior to the game? It just doesn't stop. The contact tracing and the web, it does not stop. It seems like they're being pretty vigilant about things.
Yeah.
But what can they do? I don't know. They haven't really spelled out everything that they do behind the scenes. So I think that's kind of the cloak over what's going on to try and understand. You can't really wrap your head around it other than to know that, oh, Michael Porter's out 10 to 14 days. And he was out 7 days before that. So he might be out 21 days, but he never contracted, or he didn't contract the virus. So it's just, what's going on? So you don't really know what the heck is happening.
Yeah, one of the confusing parts that I find about the whole thing is, I guess, how the NBA is defining close contact, right? And I assume they're following the guides of the CDC, right? Which defines close contact as being within 6 feet of each other of a COVID-positive person for at least 15 minutes. Okay, so that's their guidelines. That sort of makes sense. But then that oddly, in my opinion, doesn't include playing basketball, Trey, right? Like, because last I checked, it is it's a semi-contact sport, and you are around the guys when you're out there on the floor. But a player who tests positive, are not being identified as being in close contact with opponents. And again, we've had examples of this. I mean, Seth Curry played in a game against the Wizards, and then we had Tatum, of course, playing in a game also against the Wizards. But then Beal was forced to miss a game because he comes and, bros down with his buddy and they're talking after the game, so they're in close contact, but a bunch of other people are playing in that game and they don't. That's where I'm confused about the whole thing. I don't know what your take is.
It's confusing because it's a confusing way to do things, but if you're saying we're not going back in the bubble, which is what the NBA's governors, the NBA's players, Adam Silver all agreed, they said, we don't want to do a bubble again. Once you say we're not doing a bubble, you kind of got to throw out the social distancing during a game because, like you're saying, you're smashing into each other for 48 minutes. We all know it takes longer than 48 minutes to play a basketball game, despite it being the fastest of the 4 major sports. You're bumping into each other. You're next to each other for 3 hours. So they basically got to say, yeah, this is like we had ghost stats in the bubble. This is ghost COVID basically, amongst the teams, because if they're not going to be counting the basketball playing, then it's going to be confusing for everybody. But it feels like we're heading for a postponed season, even if it's only going to be for a couple of weeks. Right now they're saying we're pushing through no matter what, because when players came back to training camp, they had higher percentages of positive tests than they do through the season right now. Basically, the league is saying if we let these guys go play, they're going to be contracting COVID anyway, so we might as well make some money. The only thing they can do is increase the size of rosters to have players at the ready once a team like the Celtics has to sit so many people down. They just have to have players ready to go. It's very weird. It's incredibly hard to follow. It's incredibly hard to see how the league can go from being in a bubble and being the way that a sports league comes back and has a successful COVID plan. That doesn't seem to be the case, though the league is saying that this is kind of what they expected, and it's not dissimilar to the NFL or to MLB, right? The Cleveland Browns just made it back to the playoffs for the first time in forever, and they couldn't have their head coach there. That's how things have been happening in every other sports league. The NBA did it in a bubble to finish the playoffs last season, and it was awesome. Coming into this season, we knew things were going to be different, and like we're seeing 3 weeks into the league, totally different.
Yeah, the big part, big difference, I guess, with those other leagues, right, is just the size of your team. Like, the NBA just has less guys than an MLB roster, less guys, of course, than an NFL roster. And I keep thinking how beneficial it would have been to have the G League bubble actually up and running sort of at the start of the season to do what you were talking about there, Trey, to then expand your roster in case of emergency. Well, that'd be cool if you had your G League team in a bubble, you know, in theory safe, that you could then pull guys, and I know there'd be travel issues still in play, but a lot safer at least than just having guys scattered all over the place. Like, hey, we need that guy now. It may have made it a little bit easier to build a roster to have a minimum of 8 guys. And here's a difference then, or probably, it's like, I know Sixers fans are like going, well, why was our game not, you know, postponed? We had 8 guys. I throw that in air quotes because Mike Scott, they had to literally dress, even though Doc Rivers said he's not even playing because he's injured. So we had 7 guys. So why is that game going on? And then we turn around and see the Heat Celtics in a similar situation. That one gets postponed. That's a bit of a problem. It feels a little willy-nilly of like, well, this game goes or it doesn't. I don't know. What do you think about that? They have a right to be upset about that.
Well, I think the NBA obviously just wants to play out through as many games as possible. And if that means that you do have to dress someone, even though he's not going to play, just to get the game done, that's what they want to do, because they don't want a backlog of games to have to be played. But I really wonder, what is it going to take before we do get potentially a suspension or a postponement? Because, you know, a lot of these guys who have got it, they recover fairly quickly, so no one has any sort of long lasting impact. But what happens if someone does have to go to hospital and is in, you know, the ICU for a few days or longer or something like that? Is that when the NBA pulls the plug? Because clearly it's about money. I mean, you know, they need the games on TV, they need to make money. They lost so much money from last season and then the late start for this season, so they want to just get the games out there and play as many of them as possible before it comes to a sort of point of no return, I think. So it's definitely a concern. You're seeing so many teams have somebody infected that at what point is it going to be where they say, listen, maybe we just close this down for the next 3 weeks, a month, who knows? Who knows if that will even have if that will even fix the problem? Because, you know, while COVID is still completely out of control in this country, until the government has any sort of handle on it, we're going to probably come back and be in that same situation of like, it's a day-by-day, case-by-case situation. So it's definitely sort of weird watching the league at the moment, because you're sort of seeing these games and situations unfolding, you know, minute by minute, where it's like, oh, this guy has been in contact with somebody, so he has to be away from the team. Now they're seeing who he was in contact as well to see who else could potentially be infected and or affected by it. So it's very, very weird. But I think we are, one thing I will say, I think we're definitely going to see just more and more cancellations and postponements of games, of individual games. And again, at what point does the league say, okay, we need to probably stop this for the next 3 or 4 weeks and get a handle on it? Because otherwise, it could just be a season where you have some teams playing, you know, potentially 5 or 6 games, maybe even more than some of the other teams. Like the Celtics and the Heat, the Celtics, it's only the second game that has been postponed, but it just feels like we're on the brink of a few more happening.
Yeah, we will wait and find out. Yeah, the Hawks and Sixers are supposed to play tonight. I mean, right now, talking to each other, that game is on, as far as we're concerned. Heat and Sixers are going to play tomorrow night. Again, in theory. Celtics are supposed to play the Bulls coming up here, I think, on Tuesday nights. In theory, we'll see if those games actually go through, because yeah, you get to the point where you need the bodies to play a basketball game. Mm. And Doc Rivers made an interesting point too, you know, especially in the Sixers instance where they don't have a lot of guys. So now you're forced to play these rookies. I know we're going to get them a little bit later in the show, but you're forced to play all these rookies heavy, heavy minutes. Well, what type of toll is that going to have on some of these players too? Where like they're just forced into playing 40 minutes a game. And suddenly you have, you know, back-to-back games, you've got 4 and 6 nights. Well, wow. What type of, you know, wear and tear does that do to the player? And are injuries going to like skyrocket here when we have fewer guys that are just playing heavier minutes? We'll see. We'll just see and hope for the best. But it's weird right now. Like the standings are weird. The game results are weird. Tass, you said it's like near impossible trying to keep track of like, yeah, who has tested positive, who's just out for contact tracing. Then how long is it going to be? Oh, they come back early. Are they? Well, I mean, it's very confusing.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to track that. I wouldn't want to have a spreadsheet on that. It is. It's convoluted, and especially when you see the news report, usually you'd say, guy sitting out, he probably has COVID. But most of the guys, a high, high percentage of the guys who have sat out games do not have COVID. It's just because of contact tracing. It's a very low percentage of guys who actually have the virus. And they did expand the rosters to have 17 guys this season, at like 15 active and 7 plus their two-way guys who, you know, usually go down to the G League. So they expanded it ever so slightly. But yeah, it's teetering on a number of these games, as what happened with the Sixers and the Nuggets. Yeah, a bubble would solve everything. And that's the issue with going forward. If it's this bad several months from now, when the playoffs are supposed to start in May, hopefully things, you know, have changed by then. But do they just throw up a bubble for the playoffs is my question. I think that's possible, but yeah, hopefully months and months and months from now, things would have changed in this country. Let's hope. Let's hope. And the world. Well, I mean, there's a lot happening.
All right, let's get to NBA weekend and winners and losers. And we'll start with winners this Monday. So Trey, why don't you get us started? What's your big NBA weekend winner?
Big winner of the weekend, the Charlotte Hornets. And in particular, LaMelo Ball, who might have us bringing back the mellow drop. 22, 12, and 11 assists in a win against the Hawks on Saturday. 9 of 13 from the field, 3 of 5 from 3, the most minutes of his career. And the big news, the youngest player to ever record a triple-double, passing Markel Fultz. Now, Oscar Robertson did have a triple-double in his very first game. The game has changed, but Mello looked great for the Hornets on Saturday. He had a sick highlight, a lefty look-away pass for a bucket underneath the hoop. I loved his post-game interview. They asked him, how did you get so good at rebounding? You know we love to track this rebounding stuff around here on No Dunks. Mello just said, I played a lot of 21 growing up. I love it. He's playing against other future NBA players. He's playing against the legendary one-on-one guy in LaVar Ball. Of course you gotta be able to board a little bit. But it wasn't just Saturday, because Friday, the Hornets got a win as well. And Melo was an assist shy of his first triple-double in that win against the Pelicans on Friday. He struggled to shoot from the field in that one, 4 for 11, 1 of 5 from 3. And it definitely feels like LaMelo's going to struggle to score efficiently. Even the good shots he's taking when he's in the lane, when he's getting these little floaters, he's got space, but he's shooting it off like one leg as high as possible. It never looks like the same shot time and time again. He hit a 3 against the Hawks where he took a shot and then he kind of hopped forward a couple of times as the ball was still in the air. It went in, he did the 3 to the head, and I was like, wow, okay. I didn't like that they're calling this guy Mello, but he's Mello right now. He's figuring it out. Devonte Graham still hasn't cracked 40% from the field in a game. So to me right now, it's kind of a matter of how much longer until LaMelo Ball is starting for the Hornets. They look great when he's on the court. He pushes the pace. He's a real nice mix with Miles Bridges. Unfortunately for the Hornets, if they wanted to play their optimum lineups, they're running out a center and power forward who are 6'6 and 6'7. That's probably not sustainable for a team like the Hornets, but fun watching over the weekend. Terry Rozier, a huge dunk. Gordon Hayward has been good. Terry Rozier, like I said, has been good as well. So go check out some LaMelo highlights. That was awesome. It's good to see him figuring it out a little bit here.
Yeah, and they're coming in victories too. The Hornets are 5-5, just like every second team in the league right now. Just classic 500. Even Steven, that is what this season's all about. But he's he has shut up the doubters, even like me. The more you watch him play, it's, yeah, you're like, okay, I was probably wrong with him. I was not as high on him as obviously some were, thinking he should be the number one pick, but he's played really, really impressively. And if he gives you three threes a game or something like that, if he hit two out of every five or three out of every five, then you're laughing. I don't care how ugly the shot.
I mean, if he shoots 40-60% from three, the guy's going to win MVP, no doubt about it.
You know, a couple of game is what I'm saying. Maybe not two for five. Sure. Yeah, like two for eight.
I do love that he is 6'8", though, and you can tell it when he's throwing these passes on the fast break. He's throwing passes over guards' heads. Yeah. He's just like whipping them right over their head. And I thought that quote was hilarious. I played a lot of 21 growing up myself. I was more of a 32 man. We didn't shoot the free throws, which is why I still hate free throws to this day, Lee. But it's great to hear a throwback from an NBA player saying, yeah, I played 21. Good stuff. I guess that was not too long ago for LaMelo either, right? Like, he has been playing professionally for a while right now. I don't know if you play tip 21 with a bunch of Lithuanians. But he was in high school not too long ago playing with LiAngelo and Lonzo.
Well, you know, playing with men, though, down in Australia, in the Australian League, and he was racking up a couple of triple-doubles down there. And when we spoke to Liam, Tass and I spoke to Liam Santamaria, who followed him, he said he's ready to play against men in the NBA. And, you know, there's always some skepticism, of course, and there should be with a player who goes and plays in a lower league, in a lesser, you know, a lower standard of league. But he has come off the bench, accepted his role very well. And as Trey mentioned there, I think surely James Borrego's got to be like, we've got to get this guy in the starting lineup. You know, you can deal with the fact that he's not a great shooter because he's a playmaker, he's a defender, he rebounds, and he gets that ball moving in transition, which is really what the Hornets need. They look better when he's on the court, I think. I definitely think that ball moves better, and it sets up for guys like Gordon Hayward, who, you know, he likes to get to his spots and get those shots. So very, very good signs here from the Charlotte Hornets. They're playing well, they're winning, and it looks like they have got a keeper there in LaMelo.
Yeah, he's probably helped out too with all this rebounding by having to be the younger brother his entire life. Like, hey, if I want to get the ball, I got to go out box, you know, my two bigger bros, and got to put some effort in on that end, or I'm never going to see the ball. So that probably works out in his favor too. Wait, you're impressed with LaMelo Ball, I assume, Tess?
The season couldn't have started any better for the Hornets. It's absolutely perfect. You get him at the three spot in the draft, and although James Wiseman, Anthony Edwards have played well in front of him, LaMelo Ball still has the most star potential, and he's coming off the bench, and he's still bringing all this chatter about the Hornets. The Buzz City is buzzing. Look at us. We're talking about Charlotte for extended periods of time. Did we do that last year at all? I don't think so. And it's because of LaMelo Ball. It really is. Coming off the bench, it can only get better. I do like the fact that James Borrego has given him a role, made him earn his minutes to start this season. And I think it's also started perfectly because this buzz in Buzz City, it's all about the highlights. It's all about, hey, come watch LaMelo Ball and what he can do on the floor and the way he can pass. And it's not about the fact that he has one for five nights like he did on Friday. It's about just the stat line when it comes down to it. He can board. He is shooting, even though I said he's one for five and that kind of goes under the radar. He is shooting an acceptable and okay 3-point percentage for our expectations anyways. Mm-hmm. To be above 30% is a good start for him, because down in Australia, he wasn't anywhere near that from the 3-point land. So I think this role is helping him. And the fact that LaVar Ball hasn't come out and pulled a Marvin Bagley Jr., Marvin Bagley dad move and said, hey, what the heck is going on with my son? Get him in the starting lineup. That's a huge win for Charlotte to start. He's being pretty quiet. But the buzz is in Buzz City, baby. It's a fun team to watch. And yeah, they're talked about. And that's what it really comes down to. And LaMelo, man, he's a joy because he's got the vision. And yeah, he gets after it hard, and he can play D too. So him versus Lonzo was fun. And it's going to be, I'm sure LaVar's already put it up there on the mantle that LeBron was once the youngest triple-double guy. And yeah, it went through Luka, went through Markel, but then it went through his two sons too. They both held the title for a bit. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think LeVar was already talking up about getting Lonzo to the Hornets to play with LaMelo. So that's how great it's going for the Charlotte Hornets. Yeah. The opposite of what you're saying, Tess. Yeah, like the worry is like, oh, LeVar's going to be like, get him out of Charlotte, get him out of Charlotte. Instead he's saying, no, get my other son to Charlotte so we can win a championship together. That's good.
LaVar's been humbled a little bit throughout the last few years. A little bit. With, you know, how Big Baller Brand became Little Baller Brand. But, you know, things are looking good for the Ball family. LiAngelo Ball's going to play in the G League bubble, which is starting next month. Although I don't like the LaMelo thing. I'd rather not have him be named the same, a similar name to Carmelo Anthony. You know, like
until Melo, Carmelo's out of the league, maybe. And then you're that,
are we going to call LaMelo Melo like Trey said?
It's IG.
He got that four-letter IG handle.
Yep. That's big, man.
And Zoe is just Zoe on IG, too, I think.
Yeah, so see you later, Alonzo Mourning.
They must know somebody.
Yeah, exactly. I'll say, too, final thing on LaMelo Ball is I'm impressed for a guy that like throws all these highlight passes because he loves to throw an oop. He doesn't turn the ball over all that much for a guy that is in love with an amazing assist. So it's he knows it's there, and he's confident in his ability to pass. Like you said, Trey, it helps that he's the size he is. He can pass over a lot of guys. Man, he loves to pass, too, which is fun. So he has proven me wrong so far, you know, through the first 3 weeks here. I had lower expectations for him, right out of the gate, at least. He's a fun watch.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, who do you got tasked for a winner of the weekend?
Well, Nikola Jokic could do something which has never been done before in the NBA. He could be the first center to average 10 assists per game. Talk about passing. This guy in double digits assists right now, 10.5 assists per game. The Nuggets went 2-0 over the weekend. They became another one of those teams that's 5-5. The standings don't matter. But the fact that Nikola Jokic didn't have to do a lot of scoring was nice. He could just relax because he's an MVP candidate because he's doing scoring and he's doing the assisting. He had 12 helpers in one game and then 5 in the next. I mean, this guy is he's been propelled into the MVP chats partly because of other guys not playing to their capabilities, but also because he is absolutely showing it all off. And I think we can all start to appreciate what he's doing. He's definitely the best passing big man in NBA history. I know that that's a bit of an asterisk, but I wouldn't put him as the best passer ever in NBA history. I'm not putting that title on him. But to be the best passing big man in NBA history, that's a freaking great title to pass Arvydas Sabonis or Bill Walton or whoever. And nobody's done 10 assists per game. Do I truly, in my heart of hearts, believe he's going to have 10 assists per game? Probably not. But if he keeps being featured on the VSP plays of the week, the very solid plays of the week, you should check out on YouTube. Then maybe he will. Maybe he will. He's ridiculous, and he is. I think the Nuggets are looking for a guy to handle the ball a little bit more, to take more of the burden off Jokic's shoulders. But it's fun for us because he's absolutely getting ridiculous assists, and he earns most of them too. They're not just crappy poopy pass, you know, dribble. Oh, you got an assist. The assists are awesome. Unfortunately, LaMelo Ball doesn't have the assist chops that Jokic does quite yet. I'm saying Jokic is a better passer than LaMelo Ball. I'll say that. But it's a blast. It's a blast watching.
A couple of great questions on the stream team. Ziggy Starfox says the disrespect to Brad Miller, and I just have to 100% agree. Great a passer. Forebear to Nikola Jokic. He had one pass, the backdoor pass, that got through 50% of the time. But a good question from Greg Stapleton. He says that Jokic is the best passer in the league right now. That's more debatable.
Yeah, I think LeBron's a better passer. Maybe I'm giving LeBron the title just because he's so freaking good. But when a guy does it on the move a little bit more, he earns some more points to me. And Jokic is quite stationary. I mean, he's amazing. We're picking, you know, we're splitting hairs here. But I think the fact that LeBron is, you know, he does it for 47 feet. He does it all the way through the midcourt while he's moving. I think Jokic is a better passer.
Yeah.
I mean, LeBron. Yeah.
But Jokic makes passes that no one else in the league makes.
Totally.
Like even LeBron, right? Just because of where he operates and the size of him and the touch he has, like that sort
handball.
Of water polo handball, vibe. I mean, no one does that.
Yeah.
Do you give credit to LeBron too? Because he's done it for basically two decades now too. Obviously a lot longer than Jokic. Who cares? If you pick Jokic, LeBron, somebody else, they're both incredible.
Chris
Lee, who
Paul,
are you taking?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's one of those two, but they are different passes. If there's such a thing, it can be different passes because we still see LeBron make those cross-court sort of no-look passes where he finds some guy in the corner, which is incredible. Jokic does something kind of different, though, from that. He's kind of looking on one side of the court, and then he does that, like, almost tennis ball toss to a guy coming in, or he does that feathery little bounce pass inside to a guy cutting. Those ones where, you know, when you watch Jokic and it's like, I didn't even see that guy. How did he see him? And he just finds some guy cutting underneath. So, you know what Wayne Gretzky said, you know, I don't skate to where the puck is, I skate where it's going to be. Well, guys know, run to the spot because Jokic is going to find you, you know, whereas LeBron's more just like, if you're there, he'll drill it to you in the corner. So,
but he does, he makes passes that nobody else does too.
LeBron.
LeBron.
Yeah. He just had Jokic one this does. Weekend where he threw like a left-handed laser on the floor. Yeah.
That was
gorgeous.
A Jokic pass. I was like, this guy's been in the league for 19 years and he's still learning new things from other players.
Right.
Incredible stuff. But this was all a test, guys. Just making sure you weren't underrating LeBron's passing.
No, that's right. That's
how
right.
dare you.
It's crazy. If you were to make a poll, though, if we were to throw a Twitter poll up, who's the best passer in the league today? We're going to put Jokic on it. We're going to put LeBron on it. We have two more options to throw up there. We're not doing the classic other. Give me your answer. Yeah, just throws the whole poll whack. Who would you put, Lee? Who are the
Chris
other
Paul.
Two passers?
Definitely Chris Paul is one of them.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not going to argue that.
That fourth one, I think Harden's in the mix. I think Luka's in the mix. I think Marc Gasol. Marc Gasol doesn't really, you know, he just doesn't play it as much anymore.
Yeah, but I know where you're going with that. That's a stretch.
Yeah. I don't know. Who else?
LaMelo.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe.
Curry. Curry's
yeah,
good.
Steph Curry, yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Do you go, Harden, Luka. I like those. Let's hear from you guys in the stream team. Who's that fourth person? I'm sure they got some suggestions that we're forgetting as well. All right, so Jokic, a winner of the weekend. He's I'm with you, Tess. I actually think he's going to do it. I think he's going to do the 10 assists. I think it's very possible he's, of course, going to lead the league in assists, which the whole thing with Wilt Chamberlain, he did lead the league in total assists one year. I'm not sure he led it in assists per game. Somebody have to fact check me on that. It's like the late 60s or something, right?
That was, yeah. That was that season where he decided he was going to do it because people said.
Yeah, I know he had like 8 point. I know he had 7.8 and then he had like 8.6, I think. But I feel like he didn't lead the league in assists per game, but he led it in total assists. It's a weird little one, I think. Somebody check that out.
Leading the league in total assists is not leading the league in assists.
Well, then honestly, fact check me. So can we say Wilt led the league in assists one year?
Yeah, you're right. It says he did not lead the league in assists per game.
Well, then, so did he lead the league in assists?
No.
Yeah.
That's what I'm
saying. That's what everybody tells me.
No. Total assists? Are you kidding me? No.
I'm telling you, Taz, I'm agreeing with you, man, but am I wrong in saying always says Wilt one year led the league in assists?
Technically, they're right, but technically, they're wrong. technically, get out of here.
All right.
What's the point? I mean, there's... So if LeBron misses 10 games, but he was averaging 40 points per game, and somebody passes him because they're averaging 35, but they played the entire season, no, get out of here.
All right. Who led it, Lee, that year? Bob Cousy?
Yeah, probably. Okay. I don't know.
Let's keep it going here. These always are a long podcast on Monday. That's half my fault. Lee, what do you got?
Well, I found a team that isn't 5-5, and it's the 5-4 Oklahoma City Thunder.
Nice.
What an incredible 5-game road trip they just completed. Went 4-1. Beat some good teams, the Magic. They lost there to the Heat. They beat the Pelicans, and then they did the New York double, the Knicks and the Brooklyn Nets. Now, you know, might say, well, it's the Knicks, but the Knicks obviously this season have been playing well. And then last night, their most convincing win over the Brooklyn Nets. Down early, down 15 points early, came back, kind of blew this game out in the end. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that two things. The Nets' defense is absolutely atrocious. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's that bet you guys have? Is it Andrew? It's not Andrew Wiggins, is it?
No, it's Shai.
It's Shai versus who, though?
No, it's just will Shai be an All-Star?
Oh, okay, right. Yeah. I thought it was will Shai or someone else. I couldn't figure it out.
No, I've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander being an All-Star either this year or next season, and Trey says, no way, it's too early. That's the bet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he keeps up his play of recent weeks, then I think it is going to be Gilgeous-Alexander because he's been fantastic for the Thunder during this stretch. Again, they're like they were last season. I think teams overlook them. Teams probably think this team isn't very good, but they just play so well together. And defensively, how much of this is on the Nets? They're missing Kyrie Irving, of course. Kevin Durant was back. He looked incredible. Again, there's actually some... the Brooklyn Nets put up a few clips of Darius Bazley guarding Kevin Durant last night. It was just atrocious. In fact, if I'm Steve Nash, at some point you might just say, you four guys just play defense. Kevin, you can go and get a 60 or 70 points if you want, because he could have done that so easily last night. But really, the star here for the for the Thunder is Gilgeous-Alexander's play. Just a very, very impressive performance across the board. And if you look at his last three games alone, 21, 25 and 10, and then 31 and 6 there last night. I mean, fantastic performance by him. He's been incredible. And, I mean, the Thunder, are they for real? Are they punching a little bit above their weight right now? Or is this just the sort of team that, again, maybe other teams are overlooking a little bit? I think it's more that they are just a very good team, well-balanced, well-coached. Got some good depth. Diallo off the bench last night had a very good performance for them. Al Horford, a very, very solid veteran for them defensively. And, of course, he spreads the floor. So lots of good signs there for Oklahoma City. And for a season where, again, we thought a little bit like last season, like they're probably going to tank it, but they go out and play hard.
Yeah, we thought this would be the one team, right, in the Western Conference that maybe like, we don't really need to win games this year, where everybody else we talked about, you know, the Wolves and the Kings and all those teams near the bottom, they're like going for it. The Suns obviously want to get in, stuff like that, heading into the season. I mean, OKC, do they really care that much? They could probably, like that top draft pick, but they're great. I mean, their defense is good. They're a top 10, I believe, defense right now in the league. Offense has struggled, but Shai, baby, Trey, are you worried at all? Worried at all that the Thunder will have the record? That's all it comes down to.
No,
right?
No. He still plays in the Western Conference. Yeah. That's the thing to me. He plays in the Western Conference. If it was in the East, you'd be sitting pretty, Skeets. But if you're the Nets, you got to be a little bit more physical. These guys cannot guard the perimeter at all. They go underneath every screen. It gives a guard like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander a huge runway before they're even encountering a big. It feels like the perimeter players that the Nets are going against feel them 0%. So it's so easy for a guy like Shai to get inside, to get in the lane, a guy like Hamidou Diallo to get a whole bunch of open shots. The Nets got crushed in the paint against the Thunder, and I don't think it was a factor of DeAndre Jordan and Jared Allen are just not good defenders. I think it's more like there are so many shot attempts coming inside the lane. There are so many penetrations by the guards of their opponents that it's almost impossible to stop. Got to get some toughness out there. They need a tough guy. I don't really think that the Nets have a tough guy. They've got a whole bunch of players, but they don't have an enforcer or just a gritty stopper. Bruce Brown's supposed to be that guy, but he hasn't yet. Maybe he needs to play some more, but they got to get a little bit more physicality.
Yeah, and then they give up a billion second chance points as well because
they just
can't board either. They're pretty low in the league in terms of defensive rebounding. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a blast to watch. Just his transformation from mere months ago in the bubble, he looked like a shy boy out there. Like he just didn't want to play. I mean, he wasn't confident, and now he is. He's a leader on a basketball team. When the talk was coming into this season, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been given the reins. I thought, I mean, a few months ago, like playing under Chris Paul and Dennis Schroeder, he just didn't look good in that spotlight for the first time. And then poof, the spotlight hit, and he's embraced it. And he is I don't know what happened in those couple months off, but man, it looks great.
My winner of the weekend, I'm going to give it to the Warriors because they had you know, two wins over the weekend. Every win counts here. Friday night, Curry led the Warriors back from a 22-point deficit in the second half against the Clippers. Steph put on a show. Go check the highlights. Scored 38 points, hit 9 threes, 11 assists in 36 minutes. He sparked this massive second half run. So that was a huge win for the Dubs. And then on Sunday, they win the game, but with Curry having the worst shooting night of his career. He shot 2 of 16. Shout out to Fred VanVleet and the other three Raptors all guarding Curry at the same time. Let the other guys try and beat them. And they did. So they got the 106-105 victory. Now you had Damian Lee. He converted the tying and go-ahead free throws with like 3 seconds left after, he sold for sure some contact from Lowry. At first they thought it was a shooting foul, but then they looked at it and said, oh, Lowry actually hit him before the shooting foul and bonus, and he hits the free throws. Nice sell job by him, though, and he knocked him down. And then Siakam missed a spinning jumper at the buzzer, which Draymond did some early work defensively. Then Wiggins put in the work, staying in front of Siakam, put him into a tough shot, and that one fell short. So Curry, though, 2 of 16, and the Warriors win, which is pretty incredible. And Taz, I know on What You Need to Know, you threw out the idea, the Raptors lose another one. They had the nice win earlier in the weekend over the Kings. They came back from a big deficit in that one too and put up a ton of points. Siakam has got it going here, at least in terms of scoring. Comes up short with the buzzer beating attempt. But you're throwing out, look, the Raptors are what, 2-7 now. The schedule ain't getting easier. It's only going to get a little more difficult. They've had some games they obviously should have won in terms of the opponents. Would the Raptors look to move Kyle Lowry? You threw it out there. The possibility of, moving on from the greatest Raptor of all time, the GROAT. Would Masai Ujiri do that? You truly believe it could be in play, though?
It's totally up to Kyle Lowry. If he says, I want to go, then Masai has the obligation to send him because he has been the best Raptor of all time. Yeah, and he helped bring that title to Toronto. So if he wants to go, he's turning 35 here in 2 months. If he decides, listen, I'm not even playing at home this year anyways. I'm playing in Tampa Bay. Maybe I can go play somewhere else for a few months and try and lead a team that is a little bit closer to a championship, then yeah. I don't think the Raps are winning it. I think that Kyle knows that. But if he wants to be comfortable the last couple of years, they're going to give him a contract past this year and do it. But Masai Ujiri could capitalize on the fact that Lowry's still balling and this is his last year of his contract. But yeah, to see a legacy contract the other way wouldn't be surprising either. I don't think Masai just says, man, I'm a cutthroat GM. I'm doing it. I think he has a conversation with Kyle Lowry, especially with what happened after DeMar. And this is a different situation, too, than the DeMar situation. Like, they've already got the title. So I think it could go either way. I think it's really up to Kyle and what he wants to do for the rest of his career.
What do you think, Lee? Will the Raptors potentially look to move, like, a Kyle Lowry or other pieces on this team after this really abysmal start? Even though you got some Raptors fans say, hey, let's look at the positives from the weekend. You know, some guys got it going again, especially Siakam. And there's some moral victories in the mix there, or do you not buy that?
Not really, no. I mean, it's such a tough question because Masai Ujiri did trade away DeMar DeRozan, tells me that he wouldn't be afraid to trade away Kyle Lowry as well. It's just, what is Kyle's value right now? You know, he's still a very good player, but he's a little bit old. He's in his 30s here. He takes a big contract. So if you're going to get something in return, would it cost you perhaps one of your younger players as well? You know, I don't think he's going to trade Siakam. I think he stays there. But I think Norm Powell's in play. I think Norm Powell's inconsistency is probably frustrating a lot of the front office and the coaching staff. And I know it frustrates the fans out there. So if you are going to get some really good value back for Kyle, I think you probably have to attach some sort of other asset along as well. I agree with what Tass is saying there. I don't think Masai does it without sort of going to Kyle and saying, hey, listen, man, you want to just move on and go somewhere else and maybe try to pick up a title somewhere and we can move on as well and try to start, the rebuild process again here, if you like, because I think Kyle and Masai have had a bit of a tenuous relationship in the past. And I don't think Masai would want to just trade him without him having some sort of awareness of, where he's being traded to and what they're getting in return. So not completely off the table, but I don't think it's going to happen, though. I don't think right. so. I, I think Lowry stays there. Because this is the final year of his contract, though, in Toronto. So, yeah, I think they could have an easier separation at the end of the season without having some sort of like, oh, my God, I can't believe this guy traded me type of conversation. But who knows? Who knows?
I got no problem with moral victories, though. Pascal Siakam looks like somewhat like an all-star, all-NBA player again. He didn't for most of the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. Last four games, he's looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. And that's not a sign that he's going to take over and win a championship. I'm not saying that whatsoever. But he looked abysmal in the bubble and to start this season. And now he's looking like himself. He's looking comfortable. And that was a pretty good freaking player they had last year. And again, is it a 1A I'm winning a championship player? No. But that also leads me to believe that Lowry might say, all right, you know, this has been a fantastic run here in Toronto. But this is year 15 for that old man. You know, maybe he goes home to Philly and chills out at some point. Maybe he just says, maybe he pulls a Marc Gasol / Serge Ibaka / whatever he veteran usually does. I mean, it's just a handful of guys that play, you know, until the end of their career with the team that they played the majority of their career with. You know, he obviously didn't start with the Raps, but it feels like it, doesn't it? It feels like he's a Raptor boy since day one.
Yeah, it was a weird Lowry game even on Sunday there, too. He was like non-existent for three quarters, which you don't ever say about Kyle Lowry. Like, you know he's playing. Usually in a game, he has an imprint on the game, even if he's not scoring a lot. But then he exploded, of course, in the fourth quarter and nearly got them the victory.
He had an imprint on Damian Lee's arm that fouled him lose the game, unfortunately.
We had a lot of replays there late in that Warriors-Raptors game. I want to show some love to Andrew Wiggins' defense, though. He had four blocks in this one. Again, like I said, did a great job staying in front of Siakam. I'm sure you weren't happy with that shot selection there, Lili. I know you want to see always a guy try and get to the rim, but I think he did a good job, Wiggins did, of like taking it away and forcing Siakam into spinning backwards and taking a jumper that almost went down. If we're being
welcome
honest.
To the island, Mr. Skeets. Wiggins Island is ready for you. Yeah.
This is my island, baby.
He finished.
You
with
left, man. You left.
You can't
day.
Leave. I told you that. You can't leave. That's the problem, Ted.
He finished with four blocks last night. And again, that's what frustrates me. It's like, why is it just those games randomly pop up? Like, why is his defense so inconsistent and sporadic at this stage of his career? He can be a good defender, an impact defender. But yeah, for that last play, Siakam in this game had a few more of those plays where he was going inside, doing that sort of herky-jerky, flippy-uppy move that he does there that's hard to defend. I would have much rather seen that than a fadeaway spin around from the free throw line. But again, if it goes in, it's like, Siakam's back, you know? And we don't talk about Draymond's great defensive awareness on that last play. Instead, it's just like,
yeah, because Siakam offense. Was not the first like option in that play.
Exactly.
Like, there's two or three other options. Yeah.
It's good offense beats good defense. So that's what it comes down to. But Siakam looked last night anyway, I thought, better than he has for all. Against the Kings, I guess, was also an improvement. But again, just keep going at that rim. You might get the foul. You might get the ball to go up. You might get a tip in as well. Who knows? Especially when you're a team struggling for wins like the Raptors.
Yeah, well, they are. Are they the greatest 2-7 team in NBA history? Let's talk about it. You said you were in on moral victories, Tass. I want to ask Trey if he's in on the Chicago Bulls' moral victories from the weekend, too.
It's 2021. It's pure positivity, Skeets. Of course I'm in on moral victories. I love moral victories now. You got to play hard out there. You got to compete, and that's all that matters. Not the wins or the losses, the competition.
Because you said they were going to win a game, the Bulls, this weekend against one of the LA teams. They nearly won both of them, but came up short, unfortunately, to the Lakers and the Clippers.
Save it.
All right. Any other? Well, I'll just throw some mini winners. That LaVine Kawhi Leonard showdown on Sunday was awesome. DeRozan, I thought, was incredible on Saturday, taking over against the Wolves. Go watch the highlights. Guy just won them the game. And we're thinking of DeRozan, by the way, going through some personal issues with his family right now. Zion Williamson had a nice dunk. I just wanted to throw it out there. It was a nice dunk. It was a nice highlight, I would even say. It wasn't a layup. It was almost
flying
on somebody. Yeah, he was flying. It was really nice. And what else did I have? That's basically it. Oh, the Jazz. I got to show Jazz fans some love. Because on Friday, they hit 25 threes in a win against the Bucks. But it was on Friday. What I tell you, don't do anything good on Friday. You'll never make it into the show, even though they just did. But then on Sunday, I got really worried. The Jazz were up 20 points on the Pistons. I'm like, oh, yeah. This is going to be a winner of the weekend for the Utah Jazz. They nearly blew that 20-point lead, but they held on in the end. So a mini winner of the weekend to Utah for getting it done. You got to come through on Sunday. If you're going to do something special on Friday, come through on Sunday. And they held on against, obviously, the lowly Detroit Pistons, but they got the victory, and that's all that matters. Okay, Let's get to NBA weekend losers. Losers. Lee, who you got?
Well, I'm staying very close to home here and going with the Atlanta Hawks. This season has gone from being very promising to looking all of a sudden quite ugly out there. And it starts with their leader, Trae Young. Trae Young has not hit a three-pointer in his last two games. In fact, he's only hit one in his last three. Now, he did pick up a little wrist injury on Saturday night against the Hornets, but he's expected to play tonight, so it's not a significant one. But mainly, Trae Young is pouting out there on the court. And I think this has to do with the article that came out from The Athletic saying how John Collins kind of called out Trae Young, and I think Trae's response has kind of been like, all right, I'm not going to try as hard anymore. And that's resulted in him playing badly, shooting badly, not getting to the free throw line, and his body language out on the court has been bad. He looks like he's trying to send a message to whoever, his teammates, the coaches, to say, well, whose team is it? Is it mine or John Collins? Because if it's not mine, then I'm not going to try hard. And that's not what you need from a guy who started off this season red hot. I mean, that first three or four games, it was kind of like, man, he could be in the MVP conversation. But instead, these last few games, he has been very, very ordinary. And as I say, it's the performance, it's the body language. Against the Hornets, he had 22 points combined in the two losses. You know, he only took 28 shots. He went 7 for 28 from the field, missed all his threes, as I said, and only got to the free throw line 8 times combined in those two games. So the Atlanta Hawks, and not only that, the Hawks, this is also a loser of the weekend. Bogdan Bogdanovic has like some sort of fractured kneecap, so he's going to be out for some time as well here. They're already missing a few other guys through injury. Gallinari's out or whatever. But those things don't really matter. Gallinari being out doesn't really matter because Trae Young is their star. John Collins is a star. They've got still some young talent on this roster, but they're not playing very hard. There's some issues within that locker room, and Lloyd Pierce needs to figure them out pretty quickly because, as I say, they were looking very good to start the season. Now they've dropped their last four in a row. They were 4-1, and now they're 4-5. So there's some problems there in Atlanta, and they got to sort those out pretty quickly.
How quickly things change here in the NBA from a winner of the weekend to a loser of the weekend. The Hawks, just like that. Are you worried as well, Trey?
I'm worried a little bit that Steve Nash is in Trae Young's head. Steve Nash said that's not basketball, talking about Trae Young's little move where he gets around somebody, then stops and takes a jumper. Somebody runs into the back of him, and then Trae Young's at the free throw line. Through his first four games, I remember talking about Trae Young has more free throw attempts than the entire Toronto Raptors team. He was putting up 14, 17, 15, 16 attempts. Since then, 4-4, he had a 15-attempt game. Nice. But then 3-5 again. He needs those easy points at the line to score efficiently because he's going to take some tough shots, no doubt about it. I don't know. Steve Nash said, that's not basketball. Trae Young is now playing differently. John Collins said, I need to get the ball in there. Trae Young is now playing differently. It's bad vibes in Atlanta right now is all that it really feels like. You got an injury taking place. You got Danilo was already struggling to stay on the court. Rondo, Chris Dunn, all these guys that the Hawks brought in to the point where people are saying, do they have too many players? They don't have enough players right now. And their star is not playing like he usually does. Got to snap out of it. It's harder when there's pressure on you. This is the first time the Hawks have had pressure in 5 seasons, basically. They're wilting under it a little bit right now. It's a long season. You got to steal your mind. You got to steal your mind for what's coming because teams are not going to be surprised by the Hawks anymore. They know what's coming. They know they got to play hard. Now the Hawks have to do as well.
In other injury news, my loser of the weekend, it's going to go to Wizards center Thomas Bryant. He's done for the season due to a torn ACL suffered on Saturday night. I don't know if you saw this one. Don't go watch it. It's not pretty. It happened 2 minutes into the Wizards' loss to the Heat. And it looked bad at the time. MRI came back on Sunday confirming the bad news. He's done for the year. This guy is very young. He's 23. I assume he's going to bounce back. But he was having obviously a career year, offensively at least. He was averaging 14-7. He was shooting ridiculous percentage, 65% from the field, 43% from three. And here the Wizards are, what, fourth year in a row, is it? Like a pretty important player, at least on their roster. I'm not saying Thomas Bryant is an all-star or all-NBA guy, but an important piece is out. I mean, a long-term absence, as we know with the John Wall years there and stuff like that. So Robin Lopez, he's going to be starting. Mo Wagner's going to get a chance probably backup minutes, see if he can stay on the floor because he just fouls everybody when he's out there. We'll see what they can do. I mean, I know Wizards fans are maybe trying to talk themselves into like a best-case scenario is the Wizards are sacrificing offensive talent in Thomas Bryant for maybe a little more defense in like a Robin Lopez or something like that. And maybe that balance helps them pick up some more victories. Maybe they get creative and your guy, Tass Hachimura, goes small ball five or something. Maybe they get creative. I don't know if Brooks has that in him to do something like that, but another tough loss. And I feel bad for Brian again. He was having a really good offensive year. He's not an incredible defensive center. But no one plays defense on the Wizards. So it's, and I wouldn't even say he's abysmal by any means. He's probably one of their better defensive players. So this sucks for the Wizards, who obviously are trying to get wins too. And Beal's out, and Westbrook sort of stinks right now, and it's not good.
No, not at all. And yeah, Westbrook is injured. He missed the last game. Beal, who knows when he'll come back after having that close conversation with Jason Tatum the day before Jason Tatum was tested positive. Yeah, maybe Scott Brooks goes small like Nick Nurse did with the Raptors last night, said Aaron Baines, you are to the bench, my friend. Alex Len, you're to the bench. They're starting OG Anunoby at the five. Sure. I don't think it can get any worse. I love me some Robin Lopez. I love me some Lopez brothers, but Robin Lopez isn't going to help their defense a lot. He's going to talk out there. He is going to box out his man 100% of the time, 1 billion percent of the time. Check those box out highlights for Robin Lopez. But this is one team that the standings have. I buy into their start at 2-8. A lot of the teams are still in shouting distance from the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But this team at 2-8, with everything going on, with the way they guard, with getting incredible performances that have to come back to earth from Bradley Beal, and with Russell Westbrook not finishing at the rim like he once upon a time used to, this is a terrible start for them.
Very, very bad. What do you got, Trey, as a loser of the NBA weekend?
Well, you touched on it a little bit, Skeets. It was a bad Sunday for the super fans. The Bears, the Bulls, both lost. Bears did not stand a chance after Javon Wims drops a wide-open TD in the end zone. And the Bulls, they lost a heartbreaker to the Clippers a couple of nights after almost the same exact game against the Lakers. Let's rewind. Friday, Zach LaVine, Tass, you mentioned it in What You Need to Know. The guy is balling right now. 38-5-6 against the Lakers, but with a chance to take the lead, 4 seconds left, takes a jumper from about 19 feet off the right wing, misses it. Sunday, LaVine balling again, 45-7-7, 10 threes, hits a huge three to put the Bulls within 1 point with 17 seconds left, but with 7 seconds remaining, uh-oh, Zach LaVine takes another jumper. It's hard to blame him for taking a jumper on a night when he's making 10 threes, but he airballed this one. Would have liked to have seen an 11th make. My pure positivity takeaways from the weekend, though. LaVine balling, career highs across the board. He is unstoppable. He was cooking Kawhi Leonard in this game. But go to the rim, man. Just go to the rim at the end of a basketball game for once. Three times this week, Zach LaVine has had clutch shots to take. Every time it's been the step-back jumper, which is, I guess, more reliable. You're going to at least get the shot up most of the times, whereas he has had a propensity for turnovers when driving to the hoop at the end of the game. Another takeaway, I would say, Patrick Williams. This guy is legit, man. He guarded LeBron on Friday as well as a rookie can't. LeBron said he has Kawhi-type hands. Of course, LeBron still had 28-7-7. It was a fadeaway fest. It looked like LeBronto again there. Then they finally started throwing some double teams at him. He was dishing to wide-open things. It was like the perfect LeBron game. He put in minimal effort and straight-up dominated.
Yeah.
Patrick Williams against Kawhi on Sunday. Kawhi's too quick for him. You saw that. You see that Patrick Williams is going to be better against a bigger wing, but he scored 17-2-2, played hard, and Skeets, I can't believe it. I'm in on moral victories now. You asked me about it. The Bulls had 3 seasons of just losing and not competing. Yeah. Now they're at least competing. They just got to figure out a way to win because it's tough to shake that off after 3 straight years. You saw it on Sunday, 22 turnovers, 22 second chance points against the Clippers. The worst turnover, Kobe White, who had a bunch of them, 13 assists, but a bunch of turnovers on Sunday. He runs a switch, gets Lou Williams on him, and Lou Williams rips Kobe White. Like, I don't mind if Kawhi Leonard rips you at the top of the key. That guy should be ripping Kobe White at the top of the key, but when it's Lou Williams going the other way, it's a bummer. But they're still a young team. They're figuring out how to win. They went 1-1 against Portland and Sacramento. They leveled up to the LA teams and competed, but they still went 0-2. It's a bummer. The Bulls were 4-4. I was on top of the world. It felt like the finals again. And they've lost all 3 since then, but they're playing hard. Moral victories 2021. Who would have thought?
That is important, though, I think, there for the Bulls, that they're not just getting blown out like they were last year, where, and that started the season, they were like that here. But instead, Billy Donovan has got them at least competing, staying in games. Now it's just like, okay, now you have to finish these games off. But you're going up against two teams with good finishers, you know, in the Clippers and the Lakers. And I think that's what stands out here. But Zach LaVine, you mentioned there, Trey, he's just on fire right now. Almost a 50-40-90 guy. He's just not quite there for all of them. But shooting with confidence and leading that team. I just wonder, what do the Bulls do with him? Do they keep him? He's a young player still. Or do you look to sort of maybe trade him? Because I think you can get some decent value out of him. I think there'd be a lot of teams who would love Zach LaVine right now, because he's really showed, you know, his game has improved so much. He's not the finished product, but...
Fire up the trade machine, my man.
Well, I'm trying to get him to Portland.
Why do you want to get everybody to Portland?
Because I just sort of feel Portland, this is almost like their last chance saloon. So I think they need another score out there to take a little bit of the heat off Dame and CJ, but... Yeah.
Nice last chance to loon. I mean, he is... he's from Seattle. It's kind of close. Maybe he'll like it.
Wait, hold on. What did you say? Last chance saloon?
Well, I think with the Blazers, I just feel that backcourt is kind of like...
No, but I'm asking about what you specifically said.
Yeah, the last chance saloon, yeah.
What, is that a reference from something I'm not picking up?
Well, that's, you know, when it's like, this is the last time. This is, you've never heard last chance saloon?
No.
I think it's from a cartoon, isn't it? From the old Looney Tunes.
Oh, that's what I'm asking. Yeah. I'm asking you to tell me.
I can't believe you didn't watch the Looney Tunes back in the day, man. You're a big TV watcher.
I didn't know it was called Last Chance.
I just sort of feel Portland are sort of at some point going to have to do something there, you know. And I think LaVine, you know, I probably would prefer a bigger guy, but I think as in a forward or a power forward. Yeah. But I think LaVine could work on that team if you have three.
Well,
legit
you want some
scorers.
Defense on the Blazers too. I mean, you're not getting that in Zach LaVine.
Well, no. He's not bad. He's not bad. He could improve. He could improve for sure. But there's worse defenders out there. He's not a Jose Calderon by any means.
Oh, that's, my God. Jeez. Shots fired. Poor Hams.
Jose. Awful defensively.
Why are we talking about Jose Calderon's defense?
I got to mention this because Trey mentioned, you know, playing up Kawhi on Sunday. Plus, you talk defense, talking hands as well. Did you see this from the Los Angeles Clippers on their Twitter account?
Kawhi Leonard. Wow.
Wow.
What?
Trippy.
Yeah, it is trippy. I thought about it and I'm like, is holding two water bottles all that impressive what we're looking at here? But I don't know. It's just Kawhi's hands. I am.
Well, it's just how they wrap around. Like,
yeah, the middle finger wrap is crazy.
Yeah, the middle finger. It's getting a lot of coverage here. Go to the Clippers Twitter account and see Kawhi just handling these water bottles. Nice. Anything Kawhi hands, I am enthralled. I'm surprised there's not like a huge Kawhi hands Twitter account. There's probably one that's like got 300, 400 followers, but it hasn't really exploded yet.
Right. But anytime like a photo of Kawhi's hands doing something, shaking somebody's hand, I guess Boban's similar too, right? It feels like people just get excited all over again.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Wow. Right? I remember,
absolutely.
You know what was bugging me? There was at one point, there was like photos of guys, I forget who it was particularly, like drinking Gatorade bottles, and the Gatorade bottle looked so small in their hands. But then we found out like the Gatorade bottle was smaller than a normal Gatorade bottle. Like, it's like, oh, okay, well, no wonder it looks so tiny because it is smaller. But anyway. All right, who we haven't got here? Oh, Tass, a loser of the weekend. Who you got?
Well, they had a horrendous weekend. It was not fun for them. Started Thursday against the Nets. Seth Curry sitting on the bench. He's not playing, but at the end of the first quarter, towards the end of the first quarter, he's told, hey, get to the back. You've contracted a positive coronavirus test. And then so Friday, because they're on the road in Brooklyn, the Sixers had to spend all day in their hotel getting tested. And the only time they were allowed to open that door was for room service or for getting their test done. So they left 11 p.m. that night and then got to Philly 1 a.m. that day and then had an early start the next day against the Denver Nuggets when they played seven guys, dressed eight, only played seven, playing guys by the name of Dakota Mathias, Isaiah Joe. Isaiah Joe, he's going to be a player. And Tyrese Maxey, who was absolutely phenomenal, the rookie out of Kentucky, 21 pick. Had 39 big ones just thrust into the lineup there. Now, it wasn't just because of contact tracing with Seth Curry, but they're banged up as well. And that's the scary part. Doc Rivers said actually the injuries are even worse because they are to their best players. Ben Simmons won't be playing against the Hawks on Monday because of a knee issue. But it seems like some of these guys are coming back from the contact tracing. Joel Embiid, probable on Monday, but they play 5 and 7 games here. So They go from a team that was 7-1, best record in the league, to losing against a shorthanded Nets team on Thursday when they had most of their guys. Now they're not going to have Seth Curry for a while. They're not going to have Ben Simmons at least tonight. And I think Tobias Harris and other guys are up in the air. So it's, it wasn't a fun day on Friday. They all missed their rest day and all that. I guess they were resting, but they weren't getting their usual maintenance done to them. So yeah, a bad weekend for them, and it's turned. And I wonder when the heck these guys come back. Thing is, Embiid misses one game, but should be back tonight. You just got to check the report an hour before the game. Don't buy into it the day before. Things are always changing with these contact tracing reports.
Brian Windhorst on his podcast, I was listening to it right before we jumped on here. He was a little skeptical about the injuries to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. He thought they were a little, the timing of those issues were strange, and that they weren't playing in that game where they obviously were shorthanded already to begin with. I don't think I'm putting words in Brian Windhorst's mouth, but he was like, well, what? They just played and then suddenly they're injured, and why? What's going on?
I get, yeah, everybody was sort of skeptical, and there's a lot of skepticism around that game, but why is Ben Simmons not playing tonight if he's not injured?
Right. Fair.
That's the weird thing. Yeah, and Kendra Andrews has a great article in the Athletic about Denver and Philly and whether or not they should have played at all. And she feels that they shouldn't have in the first place. And it sure seemed like Doc Rivers was in that boat too, but you had enough bodies, so you went. Well, he sort of did. That's the strange thing. They kind of had enough bodies, but they didn't have enough bodies. But
do you think Doc Rivers should be allowed to play in these games?
You might as well.
Yeah. Suit up, give you a couple point guard minutes.
Yeah.
All right, well, we got to take a break to hear from our sponsors. We will get to Tweet of the Night, but first, someone new to the mix here.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
JD with a Monday Tweet of the Night.
Yeah, weird, right? It's good because I have the whole weekend to find a tweet. But I'm doing what I did last week, which was just take your suggestion, Skeets.
Oh.
as we know, the Celtics Heat game was postponed last night. But, you know, we worked in the biz. We're TV people at one time, and the show must go on. So they went ahead with their pregame show, and the host of the show, Abby Chin, over at NBC Sports Boston, just did what we usually do, hop on Twitter to promote the show, and here's the tweet. We'll have Christ on the Celtics pregame live at 6 tonight. Just a hilarious typo tweet, but, you know, I'm not a religious guy, but, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar is my favorite musical, but that's about it. Like, I'm not religious, but...
You're not tuning in for Christ.
Can you imagine, after 2,000 years...
He finally shows
after
up.
The summer we've had, the year we've had, Christ returns, and he decides to return at the pregame Celtics show on NBC Sports. I mean, first of all, that would be just hilarious. God yeah. has a sense of humor, A. But also, it would validate my career path that I find myself on. Like, this path that I'm on is the right way to go. Thank you, Jesus.
Also, yeah, twice as funny because he would be returning for a pregame Celtics show where there is no Celtics game. It's even actually preview.
Yeah, can't you work some magic and get the game to happen right. or something? You know, like, put him on the spot. Right.
And Abby did, of course, quickly correct herself, yeah. saying, sorry, it's not Christ. It's Chris Mannix of SI.
Also a good get.
Yeah, hey, yeah, hey. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. All right, I'm glad you went with that one, JD. Tweet of the night to Abby Chin. Okay, pick 'em results from Friday night. We're going all the way back to Friday, just quickly here. It was the Bulls-Lakers game. Lakers were favored by 8.5. Trey, you talked me into it, my man. You said, hey, Bulls are going to keep this close. They may not win it, but they're going to keep this close. And they did. It was like a 2-point game or something like that. So that's a victory for Trey and myself. Tass and Lee had the Lakers to win big, so that's a loss. I'm 6-5. Tass is 5-5, just like every other team in the NBA. And then we got Trey and Lee at 4-7. We've done 11 games here, but I don't know. What's there on tonight, Tass? Right now is like 8 games on, so what's our game?
Well, the Toronto Raptors continue that West Coast trip.
They're sitting don't
at,
do it.
Yeah, they're sitting at 2-7. Coming off a back-to-back playing the Golden State Warriors, then they got to fly to Portland, Zach LaVine's next team. Just kidding. He's not going there. Yeah, but the Blazers, they're sitting at home. They're rested. So they're favored by 5.5 points against the Toronto Raptors. So, you know, it's a good size spread. Yeah. Raptors can still lose a game. It's not coin flip by any means. So Skeet, start us off.
This one's tough. This one is tough because the Raptors, as we talked about, they're playing better.
They are.
Which isn't saying a whole lot because they were absolutely garbage to start the season, but they are playing better. And the Blazers have not really impressed, but they're the rested team here. It's only 5.5, but do I pick against the Raps again? No, I'm going Toronto tonight. Give me the Toronto Raptors to cover, at the very least. Maybe even pull out the victory. Because the defense has come around a little bit. So I think that could keep it close, at the very least. I'll go Raps.
Trey, what do you think?
Such a tough question. Is it the Last Chance Saloon or the Last Chance Taloon? Really makes you think. The loonies.
Yeah, I thought it was Taloon.
Yeah, that's, what, that's why I was confused, because Tass said that. And I'm like, what did Lee say? Yeah, right.
So is this the Raptors' last chance to loon tonight? I don't know. They shut down Steph Curry. I don't necessarily know that the Blazers, if Damian Lillard is taken out of this game, have somebody else aside from CJ, obviously, who will get some buckets, but somebody that can really crush the Raptors inside, which seems to be a place where they are crushable. Give me the Raptors. I'm with you, Skeets.
Ooh. Yeah. Lee, what do you think?
It's tough. That line is right at the line where you're like, oh, is that enough? I think the Blazers win this game, and I think this has got to be the last game for the Raptors road trip. It feels like they've been on the road forever.
They're on the road forever. They don't ever go home, man.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Now, they could be resilient and just give it all in their last game, or they could let go of the rope a little bit after two tough games. So I'll take the Blazers. Who gives a shit? Why not? Yeah.
That's the spirit. Good attitude to have, Nick.
Perfect. Yeah, I wonder if Nick Nurse gives a shit. I think he does. I think he starts Aaron Baines to play against Yusuf Nurkic. After last night going small, right. You got to play Nurk. You can't play Nurk with OG Anunoby at the five. So you go back to Aaron Baines. I like that for the sake of their... just their legs. At least you have to play a center, get some more guys playing on back-to-back. But I agree with Trey. What Nick Nurse does is take away the team's best player. He does it every stinking night. That's his thing. So I think, yeah, I worry. Even though CJ McCollum's having a great year, do they have enough? I say no. I say the Raps keep it close at the very least. And they're going to pull out a freaking dub here. It's there. It's coming.
Well, they got the one against the Kings there, which was a blowout for the Raptors. But it's the Kings, so...
Yeah. It's a little different. It's a little different. Okay, so three of us taking the Raptors to cover. Blazers are favored by 5.5. Got to win by 6 or more, and that's who Lee is taking. So good luck to everybody. Enjoy the games tonight. We'll be back tomorrow with Tass's early morning, what you need to know. Then we'll have the daily show. I think we might have a little special guest in store for tomorrow's podcast. I'll just leave it at that. But email us your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com for our Beach Step and Pod later this week. Check out those little mini recap pods in the No Dunks feed and on YouTube, What You Need to Know. Make sure you subscribe both to YouTube and to wherever you listen to No Dunks. Grab your No Dunks merch at nodunks.com. Subscribe to The Athletic already. You know, come on, theathletic.com/nodunks. Fun, longish Monday show, but they always are, boys. We will talk to you guys tomorrow. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, JD loves editing What You Need to Know. He does such a good job on it. You got to check the visuals. It's that's a nice balance of being a little quirky, a little off the wall, but also in the know. Great job, JD.
Great job, JD. Embrace the day, people. You could stay.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.